And our next case for argument is Jin Wong versus Jin Wong. Mr. Schlamm.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Kurt Schlamm, and I represent Jin Wong, Inc., a Korean corporation. This is a case about implied indemnity. And specifically in this case, Jin Wong, Inc., a USA corporation, sought to get implied indemnity from my client, who was Jin Wong, Inc., a Korean corporation.
Reset the mic.
Okay. Two separate and distinct companies. Jin Wong, Inc., a U.S. Corporation, is a marketing agent, although they kind of fall within the within the category of a distributor. My client was not the manufacturer of this product.
Do you have a contract of any kind with the Korean company?
Not that we're aware of, Your Honor.
Then how can they use the same name? Can we have a trademark problem here?
Well, I guess we'll have to get the counsel back in here to explain that.
It's not a frivolous question. I can't believe that Jin Wong California would just take the name without some underlying agreement, especially since it is apparently consistently doing business with Jin Wong Korea. And that leads to the question what kind of underlying agreement there is, which I think is probably important under the Illinois law of implied indemnity. And it's not really sufficient to say, not that I'm aware of. We really need to know the answer.
Jin Wong Inc., USA, I believe, is a subsidiary of Jin Wong Inc., Korea. And although it's a subsidiary, they're obviously two separate corporations. A contract has never been produced in the case. Obviously, the case was resolved by way of motion for summary judgment in the trial court.
When you say Jin Wong USA, are you referring to a different corporation from Jin Wong California?
I'm sorry. Jin Wong Inc. USA is the California corporation. Jin Wong Inc. Korea is the client that I represent.
The subsidiary sued its parent?
Yes.
I don't understand how this is consistent with the representation that Jin Wong California made in the state litigation that it is totally unaffiliated with the Korean corporation. If that is, if what you're saying now is true, then the statement of interest in the briefs filed in this case are false, which I think is a question of professional discipline. The statements made to the state court were false, misleading, conceivably perjurious. You are charging your adversary with extraordinarily serious professional misconduct. Are you sure?
Your Honor, I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
I wasn't involved in the underlying litigation. I was only involved in this litigation for the Northern District. So I don't know what... I know there was some dispute about which entity owned which entity, and ultimately that was resolved, and Mr. Nelson would have to...
According to the Certificate of Interest of Jin Wong California, filed in this case, it says, identify all parent corporations, and it names Zynus Company Limited. Well, then it's not a subsidiary of Jin Wong Korea. I find it absolutely bizarre that you would stand here and assert that it's a subsidiary and then say you don't really know, and then say you don't really know what contract there is. What are we supposed to do?
Your Honor, I may have misspoke then about them being a subsidiary. I know they're two separate, distinct entities. And as the certificate of compliance points out, that is the correct designation for the parent corporation, or for Jin Wong Inc., Korea.
But what is the correct designation for Jin Wong Korea?
Zynus.
Are you saying that Zynus Company Limited is the name of Jin Wong Korea?
I believe it is now.
Then why have you filed this case? Why are you participating in the name of Jin Wong Korea? Why don't you, as the rules require, use your real name?
because the name changed after the case went up on appeal. And that's why we disclosed it in that form.
When did the name change?
Well, after that, I believe that the case was dismissed and the summary judgment was entered in the lower court.
Look, if the name changed in time for your adversary to say that it is a subsidiary of Zynus, Inc., why does your certificate of interest say that the real name of the party you are representing is Jinwoong, Inc., a Korean corporation?
But that is the entity that I represent. I believe that my Jinwoong, Inc., Korea, I believe their name had changed to Zynus. Not in the USA. Getting back to the merits, it seems to me that there's two line of cases that apply to this action. There's one set of cases that talk about a downstream indemnity attempting to seek upstream indemnity against a manufacturer. We believe that those are the cases that apply in this situation. Those cases basically hold that if the downstream indemnity is charged with fault or there's a finding of negligence against them or they settle for a case in which a substantial sum of money.
Let me ask this in one other way. If, indeed, Jinwoong, California is a subsidiary of Jinwoong, Korea, or if your client is really Zynus Company and they're a subsidiary of Zynus Company, why do you care about this case? Transferring money from one pocket to the other is not usually a very productive exercise. Right? If Jinwoong, California recovers $1.2 million from Jinwoong, Korea, then the stock that Jinwoong Korea owns in Jinwoong, California will be worth $1.2 million more. It will lose out of one pocket and gain an identical amount out of the other pocket, less attorney's fees, of course.
Well, I really,
why do you care?
What I really suspect is going on here is it's really a subrogation claim by the insurance company for Jinwoong Inc. USA. They're seeking to recover for the sums that they paid out.
Subrogation depends on the rights of the client.
Mm-hmm.
I have never before heard of a case of a parent and client, I mean a parent and subsidiary in litigation of this kind.
If in fact they are parent and subsidiary. So as I said, that there's two line of cases. We believe this case falls within the avenue of cases that talk about Dixon, Frazier, and Thatcher discussed. Jinwoong Inc. USA talks about the case of vicarious liability. We believe there can't be vicarious liability because there's allegations of fault that are directed against Jinwoong Inc. USA insofar as they were charged with negligence in failing to inspect this tent stake. They prepared a beneficiary certificate, a certificate of interest, and and apparently this product was not made what it was supposed to be made. So given the fact that there are allegations directed against them that include negligence and fault and a finding of fault and a settlement, we believe that they're precluded from vicarious liability. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schlamm. Mr. Nelson?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Leo Nelson. I represent Jinwoong Inc. USA. I will be very brief. The case has been fully briefed. I think maybe my function here is
there a contract between these companies?
Let me explain, Judge. The Jinwon Inc. Korea, at the time of the litigation, was the parent company of Jinwon Inc. USA. You're correct that it is a subrogation dispute between the insurers of Jinwon Inc. USA and Jinwon Inc. Korea. After the time that the summary judgment was entered, Jinwon Inc. Korea sold most of its assets, including Jinwon Inc. USA, to a company called Zynus. Jinwon Inc. Korea still exists as a company, but it does not, it is not now own Jinwon Inc. USA or any interest in that company.
And what happened to Jinwon's claim against Jinwon California, or the reverse? Was that sold to the subsidiary?
Jinwon Inc. USA always has had a claim against Jinwon Inc. Korea. The claim against, or the liability, I think is what you're asking, Judge.
Yes.
The liability of Korea remained with that company and Jinwon Inc. Korea's insurer, a company called Dongbu.
My recollection of the documents in this case is that Jinwon California assured the Illinois court that it had no relation whatever to Jinwon Korea, and that's why it asked to be dismissed from the case.
We said that we were a separate and independent company.
A subsidiary is not an independent company.
We tried to...
This sounds like fraud on the court.
Coming
from a company that was hit with discovery sanctions and lost the state litigation in large measure because it did not participate in good faith in the discovery process, and I gather part of the sanction was based on its misidentification of itself. That is, the state judge concluded that Jinwon California and Jinwon Korea really are the same company. For this company now to tell us, oh, we've been a subsidiary all along, strikes me as a little strange.
Judge, I think you're misunderstanding, you're glossing over some of the facts here. We never attempted to suggest to the state court judge that we were not related to Jinwon Inc. Korea. We tried to convince him unsuccessfully, obviously.
Stating we are a separate and independent company conveys to most people the message we are not a subsidiary. That's what independent means.
I don't know that we ever used the word independent, Your Honor. I don't know what you're referring to. We always said that we were a separate entity. We were the marketing arm for the Korean company. We had nothing to do with the specifications of the tent stakes. We had nothing to do with contracting for the manufacture of the tent stakes. We lost that case not as a discovery sanction, Your Honor. The discovery sanctions related to admissions, which we tried to clarify to the court that we were not the Jinwon Inc. Korea that contracted and sold and manufactured that stake. The judge would not permit us to try to make that distinction, and there were four requests for admission that the plaintiff's counsel in the underlying case asked us to admit, and those were, did we provide any specifications to anyone concerning the composition of the tent stakes? Did we have any idea whether the tent stakes that we sold to the American distributor were or were not safe? Whether we made any steps to ascertain, and so forth. And obviously the answers to all of those were we didn't, because we were not the manufacturer or the seller. That was the Korean company. We were simply the marketing arm. We just repackaged these and sent them on to Walmart.
I'm puzzled, reflecting on Judge Easterbrook's question. This was a wholly owned subsidiary, wasn't it?
Not entirely. I don't have the specifics, but I know it was.
But it was controlled by.
It would have been controlled.
How could a subsidiary sue its parent? I don't understand that. Isn't that a collusive suit?
In this case, we were being held responsible vicariously for the acts of our principal. We were the agent of Jinwon Korea, and Jinwon Korea was invited to help us try to resolve this case with the plaintiffs. They and their insurance company refused to do that. We went ahead and resolved it, and now the insurance company that insures Jinwu USA, and Jinwu USA are trying to recoup some of the losses that they paid to the plaintiffs in the underlying case. We feel that...
Why would a parent and a subsidiary ever want to bear the expense of litigation costs? Are the insurance companies paying all the litigation
yes.
expenses?
Yes, the insurance
that
companies
is?
Are
they
paying.
They should have the same insurance carrier.
That would have been a lot
and
easier.
And there wouldn't have been a loss this year.
We wouldn't have been here, Your Honor. I think the law is clear here under the Dixon case, and it's ever since the Dixon case, the cases following that in defective products cases where a party seeking indemnity was not at fault in causing the loss.
Why didn't you implead the Korean company?
That's a good question, Judge. It does not appear in the record. We attempted to do that. The state court judge would not allow that. American Recreation Products also attempted, even before we got into litigation, attempted to implead the Korean company, and the state court judge would not allow that.
But the Korean company didn't know about the suit.
Yes, it did. The Korean company knew about the suit.
Could it
going
have intervened under state law?
It could have intervened if it wanted to, and it was invited to. We believe that there is.
And what about your, of course, we didn't give your opponent too much time. We'll give him another couple of minutes, but... His principal argument is that the American company, your client, was accused of negligence and failure to inspect the tent pole or whatever it was, and so it's not a purely passive wrongdoer held liable because of strict liability.
Well, the basis that Judge Schwartz imposed liability on my client, Your Honor, had nothing to do with negligence. There's no mention of the word negligence, in fact, in Judge Schwartz's order. He bases it, imposes liability on Jinwu Inc., USA, or the California company. He says it was in the position of being responsible for a...
Okay, but now suppose a plaintiff sues a defendant and he charges the defendant with both negligence and strict liability. And the judge says, well, I don't have to worry about the negligence because there's strict liability here. So I'm holding you for strict liability, and I'm just not going to bother with the negligence because it wouldn't produce any different measure of damages. Could the defendant then turn around and seek indemnity on the ground that it had only been held liable for strict liability?
Yes, Your Honor, and that the situation is squarely addressed in the Richardson versus Chapman case, the latest Supreme Court case to address this issue. And in that case, allegations of both negligence and strict liability were made against Rollins. The case was tried. A judgment was obtained against Rollins based on strict liability for failure to comply with the Wisconsin Financial Responsibility Law. The court looked simply to that in determining that Rollins was entitled to indemnification and made no reference at all to any of the allegations of negligence. And that, Your Honor, we feel is the situation here. Judge Schwartz looked to not to the allegations of negligence in the plaintiff's complaint, but he simply determined that since my client was undisputedly within the chain of distribution, which we admitted all the way through the litigation, that we were a marketing agent, that we had accepted these tent stakes and poles and material in bulk, repackaged them, and then sent them on to Walmart and American Recreation Products.
I don't really understand it. I mean, what if it's an accident that would have been avoided if your client had exercised due care? Suppose, in fact, this failure to inspect was just as careless, considering the burdens and so on, as the Korean corporation's negligence. What sense would it make to indemnify there? That doesn't...
Let me
make any sense.
I understand your question. Let me respond this way, Judge Posner. The plaintiffs in the underlying case filed two motions for summary judgment. One was on the issue of determining whether Jinwu USA could be held liable as a manufacturer since it was in the chain of distribution, and the other one was that to find Jinwu USA liable for being in the chain of distribution of a defective and dangerous product. In both of those motions for summary judgment, and as we pointed out in our brief, the plaintiff did not attempt to impose liability on us on the basis of any kind of negligence theory. There was no allegations in those motions for summary judgment that we negligently inspected. It was simply that we should be held liable on a strict liability basis for the defective product of our principal, and that was the basis that liability was entered in this case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Nelson.
You're welcome.
Mr. Schlamm, how much time does he have? Okay, well, we'll give you 2 minutes, Mr. Schlamm, since you didn't have much chance to talk about the merits.
I just wanted to mention very briefly that in terms of the Thatcher case, the Frazier case, the Dixon case we talked about, I believe those are still all good law. I believe that Fair and Richardson address a different type of liability, vicarious liability with a pre-tort relationship. In this case, I don't believe there can be vicarious liability for the reasons I talked about a little bit earlier. There were allegations of fault directed against those, against Jinlong Inc., a USA corporation. There was also a finding of fault against them, as well as the settlement that I talked about. I don't think it can be said that there's a pre-tort relationship that exists. It's not the type of situation where there's an implied promise to pay, not like when you have the classic pre-tort relationship such as a master-servant, principal-agent, leasee, leasor. This is a different type of situation. I think that there is no qualitative distinction between the parties in this case. We basically forwarded specifications for the 10 stakes from ARP onto the manufacturer of the product. We printed the warnings, and on the other hand, Jinlong, a USA, a California corporation, they also were responsible for inspection, as I pointed out, and testing by virtue of the beneficiary certificate and the inspection certificate, and they also did the distribution end in terms of packaging and assembling. So I don't think it can be said that our conduct was certainly any more culpable than theirs, if at all. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. This case for argument is Bayer versus Litcher. Mr. Brookstein.